Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uridgewood.org.
So a few months ago, when Steve Riskind reached out to me and asked if I would be interested in coming back to this congregation to preach, he said that you all like to hear sermons from seminarians because of what we are experiencing, and we're kind of considered to be like the future of Unitarian Universalism, which I found kind of interesting because I feel like I'm one of the older seminarians at my seminary. But I think that it's because we go through so much processing while we're in the school, and our whole process can bring up a lot of stuff for us. So if you're doing it the whole process well, then it hopefully you become a better Unitarian Universalist and a better person along the way as you keep getting faced with new things. This past year had its own set of struggles that were distinctly different from my first year. And I came to you last year talking about some things in one of my classes, and so today I'm also talking about something that came up in another one. Throughout the entire process of being in seminary and in doing clinical pastoral education units as CPE, over and over again, we are confronted with our own assumptions and prejudices, and we get them blown to bits. It's a liberating and painful process. Things you didn't know you were holding on to as ideas about people or groups of people, now you get to realize that, yes, you were. And you get to be confronted with it and have it all examined for you again. It can be both challenging and not always welcoming, but it's a good thing to go through. But it's so, people think of seminary as like it's very academic, but it's also, if you're bringing yourself into it, it's also emotional too, because your whole heart's in the process. This past spring, I took a class called Church History 101. That sounds really ordinary. Like it's going to be just we're studying facts and dates and that kind of thing. I was sure that of all the classes I was taking in the spring, that would be the one that would be the least struggle emotionally. I was wrong. It really did push up a lot of really interesting places for me that I was not expecting. The requirements were that we had to do a presentation, we had to, of course, do the readings and be engaged, and we had to write a paper on the subject that we gave a presentation on. We each got to choose our topic only from the list we were given. The professor had this list, and you could choose one of those. You couldn't go outside of his list. I chose this thing that's called the Rakovian Catechism, which is a catechism that was written by the followers of Faustus Socinian and his nephew, Laelius, in 1605. This is a Unitarian catechism that before taking this class, I had never even knew existed. They were Unitarians from Italy, but they were forced out and then eventually found their way to Poland, where they made a community with other like-minded folks. There was this whole community of these Socinians. Over time, this community grew, and they even had a school where they discussed and examined the Bible from a new perspective for themselves. They were looking in the scriptures for a new understanding of Jesus and doing it in a wholly different way than the Catholic Church. The Socinians, as they came to be called, prided themselves on using knowledge and reason to come to new conclusions. That is something that still resonates with Unitarians today, which is, of course, in my presentation, something that I said, hey, we have this thing in common here with these people from 1605. The focus of my presentation was the Socinians' view of baptism, because the presentation for that particular day was different places in time around one particular topic, and that topic was baptism. So each of us across different centuries talked about baptism. So my view that day was just on how they looked at baptism. Their view was that infants shouldn't be baptized because they can't consent, something that strongly resonates with UUs today, particularly in the Our Whole Lives Sexuality and Our Faith program. We talk a lot about how no one else should do anything to you physically without your consent, which is why at the beginning when I said that about holding hands, realizing that, of course, you should ask, can I hold your hand? And that's not always feasible, but we try to make sure that nobody is doing anything to you physically without your consent. In their context, of course, they were focused on the fact that infants can't make the decision to be Christians or not. They wanted baptism only for adults or older youth who could make that decision from a fully informed place. And so they were making a very separate kind of statement from Catholics who were baptizing infants and still do baptize infants. When I made this presentation, I was fully on board with this assessment of infant baptism. It also fits with the faith of my childhood as independent Baptist. I found it fascinating that my childhood faith and my adult faith had this in common, of course, from several hundred years later. But, you know, I'm always looking for connections. However, my adult faith in its current iteration rarely talks about baptism at all. Every once in a while, I do hear about ministers who say they've been asked to do a baptism for somebody, but that is a rare thing in the Unitarian Universalist world. So actually doing that presentation brought back good and affirmative memories for me of my childhood faith and affirmed that there are theological threads that have run through my whole life without me even being aware of it. I had no idea at the time, however, how much I was going to struggle with writing the actual paper. Like the Socinians of the 1600s, today's Unitarian Universalists are very much about reason. We like things to make sense. We are not much into mystery, and we tend to get confused when people talk about spiritual practices. That's kind of a new language that our movement has been talking about, is like, what is your spiritual practice? And we look at people like, what are you talking about? But we are more into what makes sense here. How can we make it fit into the box I understand? We're all about our understanding. This focus on reason and things making sense became a stumbling block for me when I began learning about the Socinians. The understanding we UUs have today about the Bible is that of a historical document that tells us about how a group of people related to their God during a particular time and place. We look at it as something that's kind of removed from who we are now. We tend not to ascribe spiritual significance to it from our own purposes. I would even guess that most UUs today don't read the Bible at all, much less look at it as a source for spiritual authority. I think it's a very rare thing. I had been a UU for about 10 years before going to seminary, and I remember very few times the previous ministers I encountered used the Bible as a reference point or even for a reading in the service. I'm guessing that that's probably true here. There's not a whole lot of references to the Bible itself in our current UU world. So it surprised me to see that for the writers of this catechism, God, Jesus, the Bible, the Holy Spirit were very much present in their lives. I really struggled with understanding how they were Unitarians, a thread of the forebears who came before who we are now. I kept getting caught up in trying to understand how these ancestors of ours were focused on using the Bible and looking to the authority of Jesus. You see these references repeatedly throughout the catechism when I was, so I came. Kept stumbling over this. Why are they doing this? I was so confused. I was so caught up in being irritated at them over their use of the Bible that I lost sight of the big picture that was happening there historically. Thankfully, my professor, who is also an Episcopal priest, but he also told me that he's actually a Universalist, but he just doesn't really preach about that, but he believes that none of us are separate from God. He took the time to sit with me and help me understand what these people were really about. He helped me see that we judge the past through our current lens, and we can't possibly know what life was like for these particular people. He patiently explained that looking back in time, we think we see people making incremental changes, but actually, they're pretty major for that time. After all, my inner voice says, these people weren't really that different from the Catholic Church that they were trying to differentiate themselves from. I mean, they still reference the Trinity in the Catechism. Through my current lens, I couldn't see that their incremental steps, as I saw them, were actually huge. What they were really doing in terms of historical, big picture stuff was that they were setting the stage for creating a space and a community where it was okay to ask questions, where people could have the space to say heretical things out loud, like, maybe the Catholic Church isn't the end-all be-all of all of Christian truth. Maybe, perhaps, Jesus isn't the Son of God. Perhaps Jesus and God have a different kind of relationship than what they and we have always been told. Who knew? What they knew for sure was that they wanted and needed a place that was safe to be able to ask questions. And that itself was the drastic change that we can point to and say, see, we are related. I think that's something that humans across time are always looking to do, is how are we connected to these people? While they might not recognize who we are today, because we don't use the Bible as our source of authority, they would still recognize our questioning souls who use reason to make meaning of our lives. My Episcopal priest professor explained to me that the Socinians' questioning was the early days of our movement's move to living in the questions that we now live in. The conversation with him helped me see Unitarian Universalism as through an evolving viewpoint. He helped me see it through the viewpoint of where here were a group of people, social scientists, you could say, who were willing to experiment. They are willing to ask what if questions, even if it means that they were killed, much like Michael Servetus and Norbert Chopik, who created our Flower Communion service. People who are willing to stand up for asking questions and being outside the mainstream of their time. Our ongoing push towards religious freedom was a scary thing for the Catholic Church during the time of the Socinians, and for many people now, religious freedom still isn't acceptable. But at our heart, it is who we truly are. Beyond all our interdenominational differences, all the ways that UUs can get on each other's nerves at times, the biggest things that we really support is religious freedom and our search for meaning done individually or in community. That is something we have in common with our forebears across time and culture. That paper helped me to see the importance of seeing Unitarian Universalism as an ongoing experiment. We need to remind ourselves that UUism has never been one fixed thing that we have all agreed on. That has never actually happened. UUism has continuously changed and evolved over time. Over the last couple of years, there has been struggle within the movement because we have been having direct conversations about dismantling white supremacy, especially within our movement, and that has made a lot of people uncomfortable. Some people have left UUism completely. What they fail to remember is that we are continuously pushing towards greater inclusion. That has never changed. That has always been who we are. We are a thoughtful, caring people who are very much about making sure that all people have a place at the table. If we could keep remembering that, we as a movement do not come from a fixed place, but a place of openness and curiosity, we could treat each other with more patience and grace. We like to believe that we are a people who are malleable and changing, but sometimes we fall into a trap of wanting the movement and even ourselves to be fixed and even finished. In the church of my childhood, they had a saying that went like this: "The Bible says it, I believe it, that settles it for me." I have learned that that is a very closed place, that is actually a scary place to be in. As an adult, I strive not to be closed, but because it's what I grew up in, it can be comforting to want absolute answers. But if there's anything I know for sure in UUism, is that there are no absolute answers, and the movement itself is ever evolving. In my clinical pastoral education unit that I am in right now at the Jewish Theological Seminary, sometimes we talk about the ways we are with each other or with our residents or patients, and we practice being together. The whole 12 weeks is about how can we continuously improve how we are being together. And so towards that end, we ask each other questions like, what if we acted as if? We say to each other, it's an experiment. Let's see what happens. My curiosity about the UU movement allows me to say, what if we could treat the movement and each other as if we are continuously evolving, growing, changing, moving towards who we are called to be? Would that help us have greater understanding, patience, and grace with each other? I used the reading earlier about a child's faith because we are usually full of wonder when we interact with children. We see who they are now, and simultaneously, we see their future potential. The ability to see both of those things at the same time helps us have patience with them when we are frustrated. What if we could look at each other and our movement as we are now, and at the same time see our future potential that we are moving towards? Can we forgive each other for our mistakes from the past while we keep striving towards more love, more justice, more inclusion? For me, this is one of the key actions we need to take towards dismantling white supremacy. My hope is that we can treat each other with awe and wonder. I encourage us to act as if we are becoming the people we want to be, as if we are scientists who are willing to make mistakes and try again. May it be so. At this moment, we will take up the offering for this congregation. I ask you to give generously to support the work that is done here, knowing that it impacts the world.